Welcome to the Lizzie Borden Podcast, Episode 11. The Lizzie Borden Podcast is a Nine Muses Books production. This is the only podcast devoted to Lizzie Borden and the Borden murders of 1892. I'm your host, Richard Behrens. In this episode, we bring you something completely different. An old-fashioned radio play adapted from The Agitated Elocutionist, one of my Lizzie Borden girl detective mysteries. Although I use an authentic 1870s Fall River as a setting for my mysteries, as well as a teenage Lizzie Borden and her real family members as characters, the stories are pure comic invention, quirky fiction wrapped around an intriguing mystery. Many years before her infamous arrest and trial for the murders of her father and stepmother, this Lizzie Borden pursued a career as a private consulting detective. Her beloved cousin, Sarah Borden, served as a chronicler of her adventures. In today's episode, The Agitated Elocutionist, the two cousins match wits with a deranged speech therapist and her devoted manservant. When Madame Eleanor Buthnot, the agitated elocutionist of Fall River, reports the disappearance of her coveted gemstone, the Star of Swansea, Lizzie and Sarah enter a maze of secrets, lies, and tongue twisters. You have met Lizzie Borden before, but never like this. And now, the Lizzie Borden Podcast presents The Agitated Elocutionist.
Autumn 1876, Fall River, Massachusetts. I had seen precious little of my favorite cousin, Miss Lizzie Borden of Second Street. My family held her in great esteem for her triumphant handling the previous summer of the case of the purloined curio. That regrettable incident had involved the murder of my father by a charlatan spiritualist and a deranged mill owner. Lizzie, acting as a sleuth in our employ, had brought the murderers to justice, restoring not only my family's honor and inheritance, but creating her reputation as New England's most excellent consulting detective. One morning in late September, while shopping down street, I had a chance meeting with her at Hodges & Son Ladies Apparel. She was overjoyed to see me and gave me a warm embrace that was quite the remedy for my forlorn mood.
My dear cousin Sarah, how pleasant to see you down street this morning.
Lizzie, it's always a pleasure.
How is your family doing?
Wonderful. The twins are almost into their long pants, and Mother may finally take off her morning black if her morphine doses have any influence. I see you've been busy here. Any attractive deals to be had?
You've come just in time. I simply can't make up my mind between this cotton fur-trimmed cape and this beautiful silk mantelet.
Oh, they're both so tempting. I wouldn't mind one myself.
Cousin, let's each buy a cotton cape, both you and I together, and we shall resemble twins of our own upon the street.
We had just purchased our capes and wrapped them about us to wear out of the shop when I asked the proprietor for a neck clasp. As he displayed several varieties of the requested item, Lizzie coughed into her fist and hurried me out of the store.
Don't bother with buying any clasps for your cape, cousin.
But cousin...
Hush! See what I have procured? Two silver collar clasps. Aren't the embossed lilies beautiful?
Lizzie, did you pay for those? Have you been taking your fancy again?
No need for alarm. My father will settle the bill with Mr. Hodges. Clasp this to your collar and let us stroll about the city as I promised.
This quirk of my cousin's, taking her fancy as she termed it, was well known by most merchants in Fall River, but as long as the bills were paid by Mr. Borden in the end, there was a willingness to look the other way. Despite this shoplifting, I enjoyed being in the company of my cousin that morning. We must have made a picturesque pair in our identical capes, clutching at each other like silly schoolgirls. I had never seen her so happy and talkative, bragging incessantly about her successful career.
So you see, Sarah, I have become a student of the criminal mind. The city marshal consults with me on his most perplexing cases.
Oh, Lizzie, your life is an exciting one. I spend my days making sure the twins don't soil themselves. And occasionally I take Mother to Father's grave and watch her weep. I yearn for adventure.
That can be remedied. Join me on my new mystery. I was offered one this very morning.
Your cases sound far too dangerous. I'm delicate and easily disturbed.
Nonsense. I can assure you that this case is fit for a novice. A mere trifle that I will solve within the afternoon.
I'll try my best, but I don't want to encounter any midget gunslingers. That affair sounded most unpleasant.
That was the adventure of the minuscule monk, and the gunslinger was mummified, most harmless. This new case involves a petty act of burglary, but not lacking, I trust, in a few singular thrills.
So it happened that I was invited back to 92 Second Street, that small, charming residence down under the hill where Andrew Jackson Borden, the furniture merchant, maintained his household. Here Lizzie lived with her father, her older sister Emma, and Abby, the stepmother, a pleasant enough soul who seemed always to be doing housework.
Lizzie, this is a most inconvenient day to be having guests. Mr. Borden has a touch of the lumbago and is resting in the sitting room.
Father is always sleeping on that couch, Mrs. Borden. I'm sick of it.
Let him have his pleasures. You can have the parlor if you insist on doing that detective nonsense.
Yes, Mrs. Borden.
You needn't be so harsh with her, Lizzie. She is your mother.
My stepmother. Oh, she is a mean old thing. But enough of that. Let's get cozy in the parlor. Ah, 10 o'clock. Precisely when my client is supposed to call. The woman you are about to meet is the owner of the Star of Swansea, that glorious sapphire whose presence in this city has been publicized by the newspapers. A horrible mistake, if you ask me. There is no better way to alert the criminal element. They might as well have printed the combination to her safe.
Is she hiring you to protect the gem?
Quite the contrary. She is hiring me to find it. The star was stolen from her house yesterday evening.
Good heavens!
That must be her now. Follow my lead, Sarah, and you shall see a most excellent girl detective at work.
Yes, just a moment.
I can only see a portion of her on the step, but she is a tall and distinguished woman, strong and dominating. A pince-nez framing her stern face. Recently returned from coastal Maine, no, Connecticut. A daughter of the American Revolution and quite out of favor with her dressmaker, who is left-handed, I believe.
Oh, Lizzie, you were just showing off.
You must be here for Lizzie.
My name is Madam Ellen Arbuthnot, and I am looking for the girl detective of Fall River.
There, that one is Lizzie. I cannot help you from here on. You're just wasting money as far as I'm concerned.
Mrs. Borden, shame on you. Do not intimidate my clients.
Well, best of God's luck to all. I'll be upstairs dusting the pillow shams.
Your mother is a brusque woman.
She is my stepmother. But that is of no matter. Madam Arbuthnot, won't you sit down?
This is the residence of Andrew Jackson Borden.
My father. Yes, it is.
I may have an armoire that was built by him. Yes, I believe it is the one in my guest chamber. You are lucky to have a furniture man for a father.
Oh, but he is so much more than that. I must thank you for coming to me in your time of need.
They told me you were good. Otherwise, I would not have ventured south of Bedford Street.
May I inquire how you heard about my services? I operate only through referrals.
Word travels fast in Fall River. You may not be as secretive as you may believe, Miss Borden.
I am honored by your confidence in me. I conversed with Officer Beck just 2 hours ago, and I believe I already have the particulars in this case. Nonetheless, I wish you would present the facts as precisely as you can.
Who is this other one?
This is my cousin, Sarah Borden. You may speak freely to her as you would to me. You can trust her implicitly.
Yes, well, that remains to be seen. Miss Borden, I am not a woman who cares for silly particulars, but here is my story. I am an elocutionist, perhaps one of the best in the country. I can restore any man's lost voice, correct an accent, prepare one for public speaking or performance, and train vocal cords for operas, lectures, sporting announcements, auctioneering, even Swiss mountain yodeling. Clients come from all over New England, entering through my front door as babbling, tongue-tied idiots, and emerging capable of reciting Shakespearean sonnets. I am so well-talented in this field that my clientele has included many a man of great power. One politician was incapable of pronouncing words beginning with the letter R whilst engaging in diplomacy with the Russian delegation. You can imagine the comedy that ensued, nearly plunged us into war. But I cured him. He now talks fluently, although he is still pathologically afraid of subordinate clauses. I expect a few more months of intensive therapy will cure that as well.
I am convinced that you have considerable skill. I can tell by the quality of your clothing that your income must be considerable.
Yes, I am a rich woman. I spend my money liberally, quite liberally. Going so far as to have procured the Star of Swansea, a magnificent sapphire, one of the most perfect of its kind in the known world. Therefore, it was with great horror that I woke up this morning to discover that it had been stolen.
Officer Beck tells me that you know the identity of the thief?
Yes, he is Arthur Tinge of Bedford Street. An unremarkable nobody, with an undistinguished degree from some shabby Rhode Island college. I had a dispirited elocution lesson with him yesterday evening, working on his stuttering. At one critical point of the evening, I needed to excuse myself from his presence. I regret to say this left him alone with access to my entire first floor, including the kitchen where my evening toddy awaited. This drink is prepared each evening by Banters, my valet. A police chemist has already examined the half-finished toddy by my bedside and verified it had been poisoned with a potent sedative.
Then Mr. Tinge is the thief, Lizzie. There is no doubt.
Hush, Sarah.
Tinge left at the end of our session. But after giving enough time for Banters to retire to his attic room and for my drugged toddy to plunge me into a deep sleep, he broke into my house, discovered the hiding place of the star, and disappeared into the night. Upon awakening at dawn, and noting the absence of the gemstone, I called for the police and told them all about Tinge. Subsequently, he was roused from his bed and questioned. The gem could not be found in his possession. He denies having it, and I fear that he will be presumed innocent.
How do you know that Banters was not the culprit?
Banters? Preposterous.
He is a man who is already in the household, knows your nightly routine, and, I suppose, the hiding place of the gem. Wouldn't he be—
There has been a Banters with an Arbuthnot for generations. Banters has traveled extensively with me throughout Europe and the Middle East. One time in Cairo, he took a bullet from a Persian bandit that was meant for me. No, if he were destined to betray me, he would have done so years ago. Besides, despite your assumption, I did not share with him the location of my star.
Then how could Tinge know it?
Because I told him. It hurts my very pride to think it. But during my lesson, a clue to the hiding place just happened to make a rather difficult tongue challenge for his stuttering. I handed him the information without a thought.
It would help me immeasurably if you would tell me that tongue challenge.
Very well. How many stars shall a swan see stark when the sea swan sees stark stars?
And that provides enough information to reveal the hiding place of the jewel?
In retrospect, yes.
Madame Arbuthnot, I am more than familiar with the Stark Swansea Swans by New England's most excellent landscape master, Henry Lloyd Dunstan. Many an affluent lady of this city has a print of it hanging in her parlor. But surely you must have realized how vulnerable your star would be in a niche behind a painting.
Refrain from your chastisement, my dear girl. The jewel was not hidden behind the painting. On the back of the canvas is a penciled note that, when properly deciphered, leads one to a shelf in a certain cabinet in a specific room where a musical box contains a key that can be used on a sliding panel in a place revealed by calculating the numerical beats of the box's music. That panel concealed the secret hiding place of my star.
Then why did you give Mr. Tinge this particular tongue twister? There were many others that may have sufficed. She sells seashells, for example.
Despite my excellent judgment of character, I would not have believed Mr. Tinge to be such a rascal.
But where is your proof other than you gave him the tongue challenge?
Alas, I have none. The police found evidence of forced entry, but they consider my claim to be mere guesswork, and Mr. Tinge is looked upon as the innocent victim of my miscalculation. This is why I sit here in your small house, awaiting your offer to help me bring Mr. Tinge to justice.
How may I do that? If there is no physical evidence...
I cannot spend any more time talking. My household and practice are in peril. Banters is very disturbed and is now imagining a jewel thief behind every doorway. I turn this matter over to your more than capable hands. Go see Mr. Tinge. Bring this deplorable business to its conclusion. I expect the Star of Swansea to be returned to me before the end of this week, or I shall tell the world that Lizzie Borden, girl detective, is a weak-willed fraud.
Madame Arbuthnot!
Are you blackmailing me, Madame Arbuthnot?
I do not blackmail. I either speak truth or I do not. That is all.
I will find the Star of Swansea for you, and I will bring this to a conclusion.
Most delightful.
Madame Arbuthnot, beyond staining my reputation, what would you do if the stone cannot be found?
It would have been a pleasure to raid the treasure house of the insurance company. First Mutual of Massachusetts has fed upon the fat of the wealthy for a good many years. But you'd sooner be able to squeeze blood from the Star of Swansea than an insurance payout. Only 1 hour ago, they sent over a thin, weedy man who told me that I could not collect on the policy because I had willingly let the thief into my home. This is why retrieval is of the utmost importance. If I cannot have the insurance money, I must have the star back, or there shall be no consolation. Now, if you will excuse me, at 3 o'clock this afternoon, I have an appointment with a man who cannot speak without stamping his feet. He plans to ask a woman's hand in marriage and would like to do so without endangering her toes. Good day. I shall let myself out.
Well, Sarah, what did you observe about our visitor?
Obviously not a happy woman. Proud to the point of mania, stubborn and vain. She makes too much of her profession, obsessed with material objects, lacking any heartfelt insight into her fellow man, and possessed by the singular compulsion to always be right in any matter, even when she is clearly wrong.
Yes, you do pick up the essentials of her personality. But I fear, Cousin Sarah, that you have missed all the important details.
What? How could I have been more...
Did you notice her excessive anger at First Mutual?
Anyone in her position would be outraged.
Or her insistence on my involvement in the affair.
Perhaps your reputation has grown by word of mouth, as she has said.
Nonetheless, we need to hit the streets. Yes, this will be grand, Sarah. We shall follow this trail to its conclusion, no matter how unpleasant.
Do you really think you can find the star?
That is entirely dependent upon what the swan sees on a stark, starry night.
Out on the streets of Fall River, our matching capes kept us warm from the encroaching chill. As we passed the shop windows on South Main, Lizzie glanced at the brooches, parlor fans, and winter sundries that were displayed behind glass. I was nervous that her mind was drifting toward her fancy again. I tried engaging her in light conversation, but she remained forever peering at the knick-knacks and trifles that were ever so tempting to her weakness. We arrived at the address on Bedford Street given on Tinge's card, a modest half-house that clung to its neighbor with an air of insecurity.
Yes, may I help you?
Mr. Arthur Tinge? I am Lizzie Borden, and this is my cousin, Sarah Borden. We are investigating the theft of Madame Arbuthnot's gemstone. How rude!
He must be terrified.
Regardless, it's essential that we talk with him.
Come back another day! Leave me alone!
Mr. Tinge, please! I am an independent consultant. The police do not yet know I am here.
Oh, I want to believe you. I have no one else to turn to. The police have treated me most brutally this morning. Oh, do forgive my manners. Please hang your capes on these pegs and come into my parlor. It's warm in there.
I must confess, Mr. Tinge, that I have consulted with Madame Arbuthnot in this affair.
Ah, that harpy! I rue the day I ever met her. She has been a canker on my existence.
I detect something bitter between you?
There is not much to tell, other than I have been a stuttering calamity since the day I met her. I merely wanted to get some elocution lessons so I could address the local chapter of my philology club. We are a small group, only 10 of us, and we have failed for several years to draw in one new member. I don't suppose philology can be very popular around here, being that you have to master at least 2 dead languages and 3 of Indo-European descent before your application is even seriously considered. In a mill town such as Fall River, that is asking a bit much.
So you went to Madame Arbuthnot in preparation for a public speech?
Yes, the opportunity to give such a recruitment speech at the Anawan Mills came up, and I was terrified.
At the Anawan Mills? Such an odd venue for a philology club.
Their chief agent was obsessed with bringing culture to the workers. In fact, it was he who recommended Madame Arbuthnot. He told me that she had helped his son overcome an inability to recite poetry in the presence of dogs.
Peculiar. That must have been an accomplishment.
She came so highly recommended. I expected not only that I would overcome my fear of public speaking, but that I would gain a newfound vocal bombast. In fact, within one lesson, she had me orating like Cicero and feeling mighty empowered about it. But it was then that she destroyed my life.
At the end of the first lesson?
Yes. She began to order me about, telling me how slovenly I was, how my posture was abominable, and that my voice sounded like a rodent being strangled. As a consequence of this chastisement, I became a severe stutterer. I could barely get one sentence out, and I was so tongue-tied. I simply wasn't comfortable enough with myself to speak confidently anymore.
But you went back for more lessons?
I had paid for 6 lessons in advance. She not only drained my financial resources, but my stuttering got worse. And then I was almost incapable of saying anything but the tongue challenges. Ordinary speech such as, "How are you?" or "What a fine day!" was completely beyond my ken. But I had no problem with such useless phrases as "Blibberton babbles bubbles blitheringly between bouts of bilious blathering." In short, I was not fit to talk to anyone without sounding like a useless fool.
That is all very interesting, Mr. Tinge, but your speech now is fine, extremely eloquent. I have had no problem understanding anything you have uttered since we entered this room.
That is because last night I finally put my foot down with Madame Arbuthnot.
That is very brave of you. She is a formidable woman.
I have an ancestor who fought with George Washington, you know. Thomas Tinge, the Plymouth bootmaker who had literally put down his foot on a Hessian general at the Battle of Assunpink Creek and won the day for the Continentals. I have always wanted to perform an equivalent act of courage.
You come from a fine pedigree, a war hero no less.
This Circe had whisked me off to her prison island for the last time. I told her that I was done with her, that my speech would mend itself on its own accord. She took it very badly, told me that I was a silly man, and that my proposed lecture on the philological life as a valid venture in less than 3 dead languages would be a disaster. She openly put a curse on me, predicting that 5 words into the speech I would lose complete control of my voice. I told her that she was vile and could go to blazes. She stood and stared past me at the painting on her wall, the one with the swans, and then she asked me to stay where I was, and she promptly disappeared from the room for 10 minutes. I had no clue where she went.
Perhaps she went to perform her toilet.
No doubt. She came out after 10 minutes, bellowing loudly and telling me that I would never see the swans of Swansea, or some such nonsense. She kept jabbering and pointing at that damn painting of hers for no apparent reason. I gathered up my courage and fled the scene. I was in bed by 10 o'clock and slept through the night, comforted by the fact that I was safe at home where no Medusa could turn me to stone.
Then it was in the morning that you first heard of the robbery.
Of course. The police woke me up by nearly battering down the door. They asked me a beastly number of questions, then searched the place thoroughly and found nothing. It was to my credit that my landlady saw me come in last night before the robbery. If I had performed the robbery, there simply wouldn't have been any time for me to take the Star of Swansea anywhere else. Unless I had swallowed the damned thing.
Yes, I assure you that I am convinced the Star of Swansea is nowhere on these premises.
Thank you. You two ladies have been most kind, and perhaps the only persons that I have met since sunrise who believe in my innocence. I need friends. The police are coming back to search my house from top to bottom. Even if they find nothing, I'm ruined. My career will be as dead as the languages I study.
Mr. Tinge, we are committed to finding that gemstone. I will be most honored to work on your behalf.
Oh, bless you. Bless you. You are my only hope, Miss Lizzie Borden. I am soon to publish a monograph on Akkadian cuneiform, and it shall be dedicated to you.
Oh, I am most delighted, Mr. Tinge. That is truly an honor.
We thanked our rattled host and went to get our capes. To our surprise, we found a man standing in the hallway. He was quite elegant in his dress, from his bowler hat to his leather shoes. When Mr. Tinge laid eyes upon him, he stuck his hands deep into his pockets, as if a dog was threatening to bite him. His eyes went into an uncontrollable fit of blinking, the worst I have ever witnessed.
What are you doing here? Oh, dear me. Dear me.
Lizzie Borden, I am Banters. I have been sent by my lady to ensure your protection in the streets. Rogues and ruffians abound.
Banters? There is no need for protection. We are in no danger.
Get that man from me!
Mr. Banters, you are trespassing on private property. We must ask you to leave.
I shall leave with you, Miss Borden. I am here merely as an escort.
Very well. Shall we go, Sarah? Mr. Tinge, we shall see you at noon. Goodbye, Mr. Tinge.
Ladies, your capes. There is a brisk chill in the air, and you may require these vestments.
Yes, well, thank you, Banters.
I endeavor to be of sufficient usefulness.
We slipped into our capes and took to the streets, Lizzie and I walking ahead of Banters, who kept a discreet distance. We ducked into a small restaurant on South Main Street, where we withdrew for private discussion and an early dinner. Banters sat at a distant table. He subsequently ordered no food and spent all his time staring at us from a distance.
Banters' protection is quite unnecessary. Do you suppose Arbuthnot is up to something?
Perhaps she doesn't want us to be talking to the wrong people.
Arbuthnot is not telling us the truth. She humiliated that poor, feckless man into submission, and now she's trying to blame the theft of the jewel on him. And why else would she do that unless she stole her own gemstone?
Oh, you are reaching for wild conclusions. It could be that Tinge, being in reduced circumstances, made a play for the Star of Swansea, and now fears that the police will find it in their second search.
But it would make no sense for him to keep it in the house. And he seems to be content to stay there until the police arrive.
You don't know that. He could be disposing of it right now. We would have done better to have watched the house rather than indulge in sarsaparilla and quahogs.
That would make a fine picture. Us spying on Tinge, while Banters spies on us. And perhaps Arbuthnot will be spying on Banters, and the police spying on her. Oh, Lizzie, this is like a nonsensical merry-go-round.
It's about money, no matter who the thief. It's always about money.
Lizzie, Banters has been following us ever since we left the restaurant. When we stopped to look in that shop window, he stopped as well.
Yes, I did notice that.
I don't understand. Is he a friend or a foe?
I have a cunning plan, Sarah. Let's see how our traveling companion reacts to a small detour.
We proceeded down Columbia Street with its long string of shops, all with garish displays. Lizzie stopped at each one, glancing back without fail at Banters, who seemed to be interested in what concerns drew our attention. We had stopped before Mr. Gerard Gumley's jewelry when we happened to witness a most remarkable sight. Mr. Gumley was standing alone in the middle of his display room, going through a violent, spastic fit of some kind. His arms were flapping, and his face was in a violent state of convulsion. From his mouth was emitting some of the most hideous squawks.
Buttercup, buttercup, E-E-O-O. Hi blah. Hi blah. Pataka, pataka.
He then caught a glimpse of us looking at him through the window, and it was then that his manner ceased, and he opened the door for us.
Ah, salutations and solicitations. What can I do for you young ladies?
Nothing, Mr. Gumley. We were just passing.
At your service, at your service. I would be most delighted to help you ascertain many fine acquisitions. Today we're having many specials.
Thank you, Mr. Gumley. This visit has been most illuminating.
Anytime, my ladies. Gerard Gumley is forever at your service.
Mr. Gumley, are you planning an ocean voyage? I see you have a steamer trunk prepared. You are not closing your business, I trust.
Well, I was considering a jaunt across the pond, but it turned out to be most impracticable. Not a good time of year, you know. Most impracticable.
I see. Well, good day, Mr. Gumley.
Ladies.
Lizzie, this is most peculiar. He's now dragging that steamer trunk across the floor of the shop. It seems that he's preparing to flee the country. He lied to us.
But on the contrary, note how he moves the trunk towards the rear staircase. I believe his apartment to be above those stairs. And yet, can you please glance back at our spy and see what Banters is doing? Be very precise in your description.
Banters is walking about, a bit flustered. He's lost his composure. Now he's calming down. I suspect that if we move on, he will follow placidly.
Then I do believe, dearest Sarah, that I have solved the case.
Based on what? The chicken clucks made by the jeweler?
Oh, it is all so clear to me now. You must understand, I had my doubts, but I needed more data. Our time would now best be spent reporting what we know to the police.
What we know? What do we know? Oh, Lizzie, you're being most cryptic.
We must now hurry to Mr. Tinge's fearful little abode to rendezvous with the city marshal and set him on the appropriate course of action.
We arrived back at the Tinge house to find the city marshal and a trio of policemen before the front gate, clustered around the quivering frame of Mr. Tinge. The marshal I had seen before, a barrel-chested and heavily mustached man, standing a full foot above the heads of the other men, his baton slicing the air, his orders clear and precise, with a voice that equaled his girth.
Lizzie Borden, by Jove's thunder! I should have known. What the deuce is this all about?
Marshal, may I have a word with you, away from your officers? It is most important.
Well, if you insist. But I'll be horse-slapped if you know something we don't.
Lizzie and the marshal conversed quietly away from the rest. The marshal stood in rapt contemplation, his fingers stroking his chin. Lizzie pointed down the street where Banters waited, motionless and silent. The marshal returned to the front of the house and mustered his men.
This may come as a surprise to you, Mr. Tinge, but we are not going to search this house. Instead, we are going to pay a visit to Madame Ellen Arbuthnot.
Oh, thank God! Bless you, Lizzie! I don't know what you told him, but you are a genius!
We shall see, Mr. Tinge. The day is still young.
Then the marshal was on the move, pointing his baton westward along Bedford Street and leading his men like a roaring light brigade down a Crimean battle ridge. Mr. Tinge struggled to keep step with them, his face flushed with embarrassment. Lizzie and I fell in behind. A quick glance over my shoulder revealed Banters moving with us, not missing a single beat. Lizzie, what is going on? You're taking a tremendous gamble. How are you so sure that Madame Arbuthnot is lying?
All shall be revealed, Sarah. Trust in my methods.
Madame Ellen Arbuthnot, in the name of the Fall River Constabulary, we have orders to search these premises.
This is an outrage! Do you have any idea who I am? You, Officer Beck, have you not forgotten that I have taken your useless son and cured him of his irrational phobia of gerunds? Have you no gratitude?
He may use more gerunds, but I'll be hanged if I can understand anything else he says.
Madame Arbuthnot, You must step aside and let us search this house.
And what do you propose to find here?
The identity of your thief.
You have your thief. That sniveling nothing of a man has stolen the Star of Swansea. Did you search his house before you initiated this farrago of nonsense?
That is none of your business. Now call over your valet. He needs to be searched as well.
Banters? No, he shall never...
Oh, grab that man!
You've had this coming, Lizzie Borden.
Oh, Lizzie, don't dear Lizzie!
Oh, this is beastly, simply beastly!
Great battering rant. Everyone behave yourselves. Miss Lizzie, let me help you to your feet. Ah, look how dusty he's made your cape. Banters, what the devil got into you, man? Were you trying to kill Miss Lizzie? Banters! Banters!
I refuse to comment without counsel.
You have got to be joking.
A terrifying testament of his loyalty toward his lady.
Well, that isn't going to fly under my watch. Men, tear this house apart.
The policemen now besieged Madame Arbuthnot's parlor. They rifled through papers, pulled up the rug, knocked over the center table, capsized the couch and chairs, and forced books off their shelves and scattered them.
Nothing, sir. It must be here. Search the upper floor.
After they tore apart the bedrooms, the police officers came down empty-handed and renewed their savage assault in the sitting room, the kitchen, and the closet under the front stairs. Within 10 short minutes, the inside of Madame Arbuthnot's dwelling looked as if it had suffered a hurricane. The marshal stood in the middle, conducting the melee with his baton, while Lizzie stared with rapt attention.
I shall be recompensed for this.
Madame Arbuthnot, you are advised to hold your tongue. Go into the corner and mutter some twisters or whatever it is you do to your poor clients.
The fury continued as floorboards were ripped up, wall panels removed, paintings taken from their mountings, including the Dunstan canvas of the Stark Swans, which had nothing written on its back. After 40 minutes, the destruction seemed to be complete, and the marshal reconvened his men in the parlor, their hands empty.
Are you satisfied?
No, I am not. Officers Beck, Bence, and Oxnard, take Madame Arbuthnot and Banters into the kitchen and search them bodily.
No! Don't you dare!
Nothing personal, ma'am.
I object as well. A gentleman's attire must not be rifled without his counsel. Etiquette dictates that a man...
Oh, shut up! Get in there, the two of you. Go!
This is nothing short of assault!
Yeah, well, tell it to the Marines.
For several minutes, there came the most horrific shrieks, howls of protests, and what sounded like failed attempts at escape. When they all came back into the parlor, Madame Arbuthnot and Banters were disheveled, their clothing disturbed and walking dizzily. They stood in the ravished parlor, now both quite subdued.
Nothing. They're clean.
The gem is here. I know it. It must be.
You have put my reputation on the line. Bring in Tinge.
Don't hit me. I have a very fragile face.
For Jove's sake, man. No one is going to hit you. Arbuthnot, what have you done to this man?
Nothing that he hasn't done to himself. And I must protest the violation of my physical being while this sniveling worm is allowed to go without so much as a slap on the wrist. I insist that you search him the same way that you searched me. And while you are at it, search this impetuous and prideful girl here who calls herself a detective. Search her! In fact, search her even before you search Tinge. I think you may be surprised.
Why not search the marshal? Or innocent Sarah here, or...
Yes, Miss Lizzie Borden! The girl who takes her fancy in the shops! Search her! Search her!
Well, you can clearly see my pockets are empty. I have hidden nothing in my cape pockets.
Nothing? Nonsense. Look again. It must be there. She was in Mr. Tinge's house for quite some time. My man Banters here will testify to that. Why shouldn't you be tempted to take your fancy, as you so eloquently phrase it?
But I don't have it.
You are lying. Marshal, search her immediately. Why do you stand there doing nothing?
I shall do it myself!
Great balls of fire, woman! Get off Miss Lizzie at once! Officer Beck, seize her!
You must have it! If you don't have it, all is lost! Oh, all is lost!
Put her on the couch. She's demented.
I am doomed! I am doomed!
Lizzie, this has been most perplexing. Would you be so kind as to explain?
Of course, Marshal. I suspected from the start that Mr. Tinge was wholly innocent, that his elocution teacher had, for reasons of her own, needed to steal her own gemstone and declare it lost so she could collect the insurance money. Perhaps her finances had gotten out of control, or she was too deeply in debt, or she was living too well for her own convenience. This was a woman who needed money, a lot of it, very fast. And her most valuable asset, the Star of Swansea, was her surest bet.
But why not just sell it legally?
I can imagine she was tempted to sell it legally and get the market value for it, an amount which must be quite considerable. But instead, she had devised a more sinister plan, to trick the insurance company and to have the stone fenced in the underworld at the same time, thereby doubling its value and, from her perspective, harming no one but the insurance company that was, in her eyes, a greedy criminal.
But what did poor Mr. Tinge have to do with it?
She needed a prime suspect. She spent months turning Arthur Tinge into a coward, someone scared even of his own voice. And last night, she reaped the harvest of her labor. When Tinge arrived for his lesson, she awkwardly drew his attention to the location of the star. Then, after his departure, the valet arranged the home to look as if a burglary had taken place. He even drugged the knight Toddy to show that Madame Arbuthnot had been unconscious when the stone was allegedly taken from the house. In the morning, it was a simple matter of calling the police and informing them that Mr. Tinge had done the deed. The stone would never be found, of course, but suspicion would fall on Tinge forevermore.
So I was right after all, Lizzie, about her stealing the stone herself.
Yes, Sarah. I suspected almost immediately that Madame Arbuthnot had stolen the gem. But what bothered me, which is why I seemed to dismiss your idea at the time, was why she would hire me as a consulting detective, knowing that I would have the power to discover the conspiracy. Just now, when Madame Arbuthnot and Banters attacked me, I finally saw her plan very clearly. Madame Arbuthnot knew that I have a reputation in this town for taking my fancy, and she plotted to implicate me in the robbery. She had Banters follow me to Mr. Tinge's residence. Banters had a mission. And what was Banters' mission? Only Banters can tell.
Banters?
I endeavor to remain non-committal.
I can tell you Banters' mission. Something in Arbuthnot's plan had gone awry.
But what could have happened?
Madame Arbuthnot confessed to me that she had been humiliated by First Mutual of Massachusetts. They had used a loophole to prevent her from ever collecting on the theft insurance. She had revealed to the thief the hiding place of the property, and on that basis, her claim was rejected.
But she still could have sold the stone to the underworld.
But, as it turned out, the money involved was insufficient without the additional insurance money. So her only option now was to restore the star to her possession so she could sell it openly. This would be most difficult. She could not suddenly claim that the gem had slipped behind some pillow shams. That would lead to gossip. Rumors. Who would believe her? No, she needed to retain the illusion of robbery, but have the star make a dramatic reappearance.
So that's why she suddenly targeted you as the thief.
Yes. After the police and the insurance agent left her home, Madame Arbuthnot and her valet must have conspired very quickly on a second, more improvised plan. I, Lizzie Borden, would be labeled an additional suspect. Immediately, a note was sent to my house requesting a meeting. Madame Arbuthnot had made it very clear to me that I should be present at Mr. Tinge's home later that morning and was very precise about the time. This was because Banter's mission was to make sure that I would be found with the stone in my possession. I knew there had to be a reason for him to enter Mr. Tinge's house without knocking. That had been his moment. He was temporarily alone in the hallway with my cape. He could not have devised a more perfect opportunity. Then he followed us, making sure that I remained in ignorance of my possession until he could arrange for me to be incriminated before the police. If you gentlemen had seen it emerge from my cape, you would have been convinced that I had stolen it from Mr. Tinge, and you would have arrested me as a co-conspirator in the theft.
So that's what you were talking to the marshal so earnestly about in front of Mr. Tinge's house.
Yes. Imagine Banter's confusion when I had the police search diverted to his own lady's house, presenting him with quite a dilemma. Attacking me in the street, even before an assembled police force, would provide him with the opportunity to extract the stone from my pocket, thereby preparing me for the moment of humiliation that Madame Arbuthnot so desired. Likewise, Madame Arbuthnot was attempting to retrieve the stone when she attacked me herself.
Remarkable.
Balderdash, the poor girl is seized by the fever of her imagination.
You,
shut your gob.
Where is the stone if not in your pocket? If Banter's put it in your cape at Tinge's house, and your pockets are now empty, where is the Star of Swansea?
That is something that no one could have predicted. Sarah, would you be so kind as to check your pockets?
But Lizzie, surely you don't think that I
have... Please, Sarah? Trust in my methods. Check your pockets.
And there it was, the Star of Swansea, one of the most beautiful stones I had ever seen or touched, warm and glowing in my fingers. But how, Lizzie?
Did you not fail to notice that when we left Mr. Tinge's house, you took my cape quite by accident? Note the blue trim on the sleeves, how it is a different shade than mine. I did not even notice until just now, an oversight for which I shall never forgive myself.
Banters, is this all true?
I would have seen Lizzie Borden hanged.
I'm sure you would have. As for Madame Arbuthnot, let her be advised. The next time you give elocution lessons to Mr. Gumley, the jeweler, who is well known for trading stolen gems to the criminal underworld, be so kind as to keep him out of your personal affairs. Mr. Gumley is a man who is as well known to the police for his various speech impediments as he is for his illegal fencing of stolen goods. Sarah and I witnessed him practicing his vocal exercises in his shop this morning, a clear sign that he had taken lessons. He had been planning to abandon his shop and go to some remote country where the law could not reach him. I wonder how much money he would have gotten for cutting the Star of Swansea. Enough to buy a one-way ticket to Europe and never see Fall River again? Anyway, he is still in Columbia Street, perhaps a bit rattled from his disappointment. I am sure it would take little pressure from the police to secure his testimony that he had conspired in the theft of the Star of Swansea. Isn't that right, Madame Arbuthnot?
May your words choke in your throat. Banters, I would have taken a bullet for you too, you know.
My lady, considering the present circumstances, and despite the fidelity the Banters have given to the Arbuthnots over the centuries, at this current moment in time, I don't give a monkey's dash.
Oh, Banters! Oh, my Banters! You can't mean this!
Go gag on your Star of Swansea.
Let's get these ruffians down to the station. As for Madame Arbuthnot, my only advice at this point would be to speak as little as possible, something I'm sure she will find difficult. Lizzie, I must commend you and add this case to your wall of accomplishments.
No need to give my name to the reporters. My services require no thanks. Perhaps some discreet home-cooked meal and some light, hearty banter over a leg of mutton and red wine.
Lizzie Borden, you are the most excellent girl detective of Fall River.
Oh, Miss Lizzie Borden, you can't imagine how overjoyed I am. I am a free man. A free man. Oh, and I'm not stuttering. Marshall, I'm not stuttering. The curse is lifted.
Yes, well, good luck with that.
You are all invited to my lecture at the Athenaeum tonight. The Philological Life as a Valid Venture in Less Than 3 Dead Languages.
I believe I'm indisposed. Perhaps another time.
And so, once again, I had witnessed my good friend, Lizzie Andrew Borden, the girl detective, reduce hardened law officers to stunned silence. I escorted Lizzie back towards 2nd Street so she could return to her world of household chores and trivial conversations with her family. Admittedly, I was very nervous, almost frightened of her. Just 3 short hours ago, we were best friends, romping down street and buying new clothing. Then she had taken me on an adventure, one that involved intrigue, police raids, various physical assaults, and a jewel theft. I could not believe that so much could be compressed into so short a morning, and it was not even time for dinner.
Well, Sarah, I hope you have enjoyed your first criminal investigation of the season. Dare I say it was fun?
I agree, but it is sad that people have gone to prison and lives have been destroyed.
But they are bad people, Sarah. They are paying their debt to society. The world is better off without them.
But Mr. Tinge?
I will personally donate money to his foundation and sponsor him to give his speech at the Athenaeum. All of Fall River will enjoy his speech, The Philological Life as a Valid Venture in Less Than 3 Dead Languages.
How do you do it, Lizzie? I mean, honestly, how do you do it?
Me? I told you many times, Sarah dear, I am the most excellent girl detective. Did you expect me to do otherwise? Come, perhaps when we get home, I shall find a new client and we shall have a new adventure. After all, the day is still young.
We hope you have enjoyed listening to The Agitated Elocutionist. This radio play adaptation is copyright 2017 by Richard Behrens and Nine Muses Books. It was written and directed by Richard Behrens, based on the short story, The Agitated Elocutionist, a Lizzie Borden girl detective mystery. It was recorded at the Monadnock Broadcasting Group in Keene, New Hampshire. Music, sound effects, and editing by TAM Productions. Our talented players include Tara Sabino Potter as Lizzie Borden, Heather Herring as Sarah Borden and the narrator, Wendy Almeida as Madame Arbuthnot, Catherine Behrens as Abby Borden, Ian Heffley as Arthur Tinge, Christopher Pratt as the valet Banters, Tyler Strickland as the city marshal, Richard Behrens as Gerard Gumley, and Aaron Potter Richwa as police officers Beck, Bence, and Oxnard. Special thanks to the Monadnock Broadcasting Group, our audio engineer Mason Amadeus, and to my wife Anna, a speech therapist, who inspired my elocution-related humor in the story. Find more Lizzie Borden Girl Detective Mysteries at Amazon.com and learn more about us at LizzieBordenGirlDetective.com, where you could sign up for our free newsletter, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest, listen to more Lizzie Borden podcasts on our website or in iTunes. Watch for our new short story collection, The Audible Amnesiac, and other Lizzie Borden Girl Detective Mysteries, coming soon from Nine Muses Books.